is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. White supremacy is the new Nazi? Well, that's according to a lot of people here as the country continues to be divided on racism. Big conversation there ahead with Dr. Carol Swain. We'll talk about this white supremacy business and how racism is impacting the nation. Also, we have a deep dive into a topic that I'm very passionate about, and that is America's cities. I've been talking about this for a very long time, from sea to shining sea. Not just one or two people, but what's going on with our cities, and we need to take a real good look at this, and we have Dennis Santiago here. We'll do a deep dive on this city decline, and a special report coming, and also an article I'll tell you about on that just ahead here. A lot of news. Let's get to the top stories here, please, and welcome in Del Wilbur. Del is a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism officer. He has a focus on technical and human intelligence collection activities. Joining us also in the top news is Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator and host here at America Out Loud. She's an author. Her newest book you can find on the America Out Loud bookstore. Go ahead and pick that up, friends, or on Amazon. Hamas, the story of Islamic Jihad on Israel's front lines. So federal agents fanned out across the state here and detained approximately about 680 workers. This was mostly at poultry and food processing plants and that kind of a thing. Well, a spokesman for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement said about 300 or so of those people have been released as they had no criminal record or any reason to remain detained. Now, remember, this raid was about going after those criminal people. It's really what it was mostly focused on. A Department of Homeland Security official said this raid had been planned for months. This story has a lot of legs to it here. What I'm wondering, first of all, is the timing of this. I'm not sure the timing will best serve what's happened here, because here's the outrage, Dell. The Mississippi Department of Child Protection Services said that no child was in its custody. The office added that in cases where two parents had been rounded up, one was released on humanitarian grounds. It is believed that all children were with at least one of their parents as of last night. Now, this was the comment that the Department of Child Protection Services put out there. But the outrage is being heard again from coast to coast here. You see images and videos of little children that are being used as media pawns. One little girl, 11-year-old girl, says, "Government, please show some heart," and begging to be with their families. And the media cameras, of course, were all over this. Dale, what about the timing of this? You know, with all this stuff about the immigration and then these raids happening in Mississippi and after the shooting in El Paso against Mexicans here, timing on this doesn't seem right to me.
No, I agree. I think it's was ill-timed, and I think they should have put a delay on this at least for a period of time to kind of let things settle down from El Paso and Dayton, Ohio. So whomever was in the ultimate approving authority of those raids, I think needs to take a step back and think about what they're doing in the future.
Yeah, see, that's exactly it. So you see what I see here. They come out and said it's wrong. They're good people like us. This is one of the people there in Mississippi who said, who cleans buildings for a living and had, pulled up to his brothers and said this, you know, and I quote, "God don't like ugly. And this is ugly. I hate how Americans do them." But then, Ilana, here's the twist of this thing. Another resident came out and said that's all they want from these people is their votes. And this was a Mississippi resident, of course. And it goes on and on. And the Democrats, of course, the blame game and illegal immigration. But the timing of this was horrific, I'm believing. There's going to be some more fallout, I think, from this, Ilana. And there's talking about more of these raids in some of the cities. What do you think about this?
Look, this raid was planned starting a year ago. And the problem with working with big government is that it's very hard to make adjustments when there is an urgent reason to change. So they had planned it for this date, and they didn't bother to change it. However, I think that's really a bad thing. I would like to see the government being a little bit more flexible in a situation like this. The report that I heard was that the 300 some odd people who went into who were sent home were either single parents or had young children at home, or and didn't have criminal complaints against them. Those who needed to be so tracked went home with ankle monitors. So there was this picture of this little girl who was crying her heart out because she wanted to be with her mama. It's heartrending, but it's very, very disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And it gives an impression that simply isn't the reality. You know, when somebody commits a serious crime and they're taken to jail, their children are left to whatever. They're left to family members.
It's a valid point you make there, Ilana. Valid point. However, the media is not accepting your explanation, and they continue to have the camera there to catch the kids at their this point of mercy. And again, the timing of it is absolutely in question as these ICE raids are happening here. One other point I want to talk to you both about this story, and this was interesting to me, and I think listeners need to know. So a number of residents right there in that area said, and this is from the New York Times now, I want to read to you, said that Hispanics, who account for about 5% of the city's population, had arrived in noticeable numbers about 13 years ago, the Times reported. They have tended to cluster and stay to themselves, and their children often translate at parent-teacher conferences. And my point here, Dell, is assimilation. There's, again, one of the other big things I think that people are overlooking is that there's no assimilation with a lot of people that are coming into the country. And to me, this story hits center to that. They're not assimilating the United States at all. They're bringing their countries and their ways. And that's one of the beefs that a lot of people have, isn't it?
Sure. You remember, I'm sure you don't remember personally, but from history, years ago in Ellis Island, when people came to this country from all of these, you know, other European countries, Eastern European countries and that, their goal was to become an American.
That's right. They came
here looking for a new start, for an opportunity that America presented that they had heard about, you know, in their home country. And when they came to America, they went out of their way to try to learn the language and to assimilate, to use your word. You know, that was their goal, was to become an American. And that's the difference nowadays with a lot of the refugees and that have come to this country, is they're not interested in assimilating. They don't care. They you know, and there's nothing wrong with having an appreciation for one's heritage, where they come from, you know, their history. That's great. I mean, that's what mm-hmm. gives the fabric of American life such vibrancy, is to be able to celebrate that. But you also have to become an American and appreciate what America has done for all of us since its beginnings.
Right, that's exactly it. We're not seeing that clearly with a lot of these cases, but a lot of people will argue this point, friends, but I think there's something to this part of the story. Again, timing, I don't think, was probably proper in this raid, quite frankly, and I think there's a media propaganda campaign going on here that everybody knows about, and these kinds of things are going to continue to play to that, and they could eventually plague the administration even more with that those middle votes that you've got to attract here. So be aware of what I'm telling you here. Another big breaking news story in the last day or so is Jeffrey Epstein. This is the sex trafficking pervert, if you will, the wealthy multi-billionaire, financier, wherever he got his money from, right? You can just imagine what that is. Well, he committed suicide, and he is dead. It was a striking news that a lot of people surprised. This was just a couple of weeks after they found him injured in his cell, and there was talk then that he might have done something to himself here. Dell, he's in the Manhattan jail now, and one of the things I got to tell you here that gets me with these kinds of stories, first of all, I got to be straight with you here that this is a very devious character, to say the least, and the kinds of things and crimes he was doing was beneath humanity, for sure. Obviously, there's a special place in hell for this man, I might say to you. But here's what really gets me about our system, and I'd like you to opine on this, is this. When this happened a couple of weeks ago, I seen many stories about the fact that, well, we can't let him kill himself. And, you know, that's always the case with current. They don't want them to kill themselves. But, you know, what came to my mind this morning is the money the state will save and the government will save from having to go after this man. And quite frankly, I'm not sure we don't leave a rope there for these people to hang themselves, quite frankly. Now, is that a little too harsh, Dell, or what?
Well, you know, basically, the world is a little bit better place now that he's gone. So, you know, we can always look at it from that point of view. But, you know, it saves the government some money. But you know, the guy was facing a future completely foreign to him from how he had lived his life. I mean, a life of privilege and wealth. And he was never going to get out of jail. So, was it possible he committed suicide? Absolutely. Was it possible that someone else assisted him? Well, you know, you never know. I mean, there certainly needs to be an investigation into that to try to determine exactly what happened.
You think so? Wow. Yeah, I really don't care how they did it. Just the fact that he's gone is celebration enough for me, quite frankly. So in any event, let me turn the corner here, Ilana. I want to talk to you about these protests at Mitch McConnell's home. So Democratic presidential candidate and Ohio representative Tim Ryan, well, he led a caravan of gun law reform activists almost 400 miles from their home there in Ohio to McConnell's home with all kinds of things. And you've seen, everybody's seen these videos. Now, this was also, by the way, this caravan was co-led by the gun control group Moms Demand Action. Okay. Well, now what's happening now is there's a contest here because Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and many other leading Democrats have been urging McConnell to end the Senate's August recess, and they want the Senate to be brought back to be able to take a look at these background checks and other sort of legislation. There's a two-piece legislation they're trying to push through here. But the images have been very, very bad. One person there on the front lawn, Ilana, said that they were using a voodoo doll on McConnell and stabbing the voodoo doll. And then others said they wanted to stab the mother of Fletcher in the heart. And some real high-end vocabulary coming out of those protests there, clearly. What do you make of this with Tim Ryan and all of this on his home, nonetheless, with the protest?
Well, I think that Tim Ryan ought to be really ashamed of himself, and I hope this grounds his campaign into the dust. What's going on with these demonstrations, and they have from the beginning, they're vulgar, they're evil because they are so violent in speech, and they are wishing death on really good people. The fact that these demonstrators don't agree with the positions that the people they're targeting have, that's disgusting. I mean, they're allowed to disagree, but they're not allowed to threaten. They're not allowed to assault. They're not allowed to do the things that these demonstrators are doing. You know, Mitch McConnell was attacked also in a restaurant a while back in October, and he was awesome. He just sat there and they screamed at him. They surrounded his table. They took his food, the plate that was in front of him, and threw it out the door. And he just sat there until it was over. And then afterwards, he left in a very dignified way and thanked all the people in the restaurant who had said, "Leave him alone, leave him alone." This is a man with a tremendous amount of personal dignity. And he is not going to give in to this. He's not going to be cowed by it or intimidated by it. And I think that there should be some sort of criminal action against these people because, frankly, they were on his private property.
Yeah, well, I'm not even sure if it was the property or whether it was the public space there, Ilana, like the sidewalk and the street. I don't know. Although it did look like they were on the lawn, so I don't really know.
Dell, it looked like they were on the lawn.
Yeah, it could be. Could be. So Dell, you know, wherever they were, I don't know, lawn front or whatever, the case is that we're seeing this far too frequently now, where we're getting personal with people. And this is another case of that, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. I mean, and it's ridiculous because, you know, I disagree with probably every single policy position that Barack Obama took, but I certainly didn't advocate violence directed at him. And, you know, nor any other politician that I disagree with, you know, and that is, I guess, the difference between us and them.
Dale, I want to talk to you as we're on this topic here about the NRA and the background checks and President Trump. Well, Wayne Lapierre, the chief executive of the NRA, came out and said that, you know, after now, President Trump expressed a lot of support for background checks and said something was going to happen, hopefully the best, progress that's ever been made in this particular area. And he said that Lapierre said he does not think that there's going to be enough support for this. And he warned the president to be careful. Now, the president says he's been in touch and constant communication with the NRA. Other people, of course, are suggesting the NRA is the big bad boogeyman. What do you think will happen with this whole thing? Will something come of this, do you think, in regards to the gun legislation?
You know, I who knows in today's environment, but, you know, the one thing about the NRA, and I've not agreed with everything that the NRA, every position that it's ever taken. I've had some disagreements with the organization, but the thing that people just don't appreciate nor probably understand is that the NRA is one of the biggest proponents for gun safety and for enforcing existing gun laws of anybody in this country. So, you know, they become demonized when the reality is that people should be, you know, lining them up to support their efforts to control and to enforce existing gun laws and that, and they just don't do it. They choose to demonize them instead.
Yeah, yeah. Ilana, are you confident at all that there will be some legislation on gun legislation?
Oh, I believe there will be, but I think the thing that we have to watch out for most carefully is that the way the law is crafted, the devil is in the details. And this is a very complex issue. There's no easy answer. I'm of two minds regarding background checks. I understand the need for them, but I also understand why they are dangerous, because basically they out every single person who has a gun. And in the situation that the government wants to take guns away at some point, they know where all the guns are. And that's the reason why there is so much opposition to this among gun owners.
Well, there's not a lot of there's not a lot of trust with government when it comes to the gun owning community, is what you just point out, Ilana. And there's a lot of truth to that, clearly, because they've showed their hand before and people just don't trust what they're going to do next. And clearly, this is where the divide is, and the left makes it clear what they want to do. So there hence is your problem right there, which is why there's no compromise on this big challenge for the nation here. Ilana, let's talk about Iran a moment and move overseas here to some international news here. So this was interesting here over the past week or two. I've seen here they're using cyber tech. You know, it's amazing some of these countries how cyber advanced they are. Even we've had a lot of troubles with even North Korea in this regard. But they are using cyber tech as weapons, it's being reported now, that they're jamming. The first story I've seen in this is they're jamming the GPS of ships through the Straits of Hormuz to get them to wander into their waters so they can capture the ships and go through this whole process that they usually do of trying to, you know, be pirates on the high seas, clearly. But there's also another piece of the story about the airports. It's being reported, the Jerusalem Post reported, Iranians are using Russian technology and there's GPS. And the Israeli Airport Authority announced that commercial airlines are having problems and difficulty landing and related disruptions due to this. What do you make of the story?
Iran has been targeting shipping in order to get the ships, as you say, to move closer into Iranian waters where they can capture them. They've targeted U.S. military and government operations, as well as U.S. corporate interests, including millions of unpatched Microsoft Outlook systems, and they attacked LinkedIn. And as far as Israel is concerned, well, we know that they've got their evil eye on Israel, and they will do anything they can to disrupt Israel's day-to-day service and strategic services. This is a very serious problem. Iran is very serious. They are not backing down. Mm-hmm. I don't think these are games. They're not fun and games for Iran. These are serious infractions of international law. And they are trying to position themselves to be a much more active player in the geopolitical environment in the entire region and maybe in the world.
Yeah. Dale, let me just ask you straight out here. As you study this Iran business here, do you think we're headed to a major confrontation with Iran? Are we headed to war with them at some point here, just in the near future?
You know, I would hope not, because I don't think it's in our interest right now until they, you know, cross that red line in the sand, I guess, to use a euphemism. But let's certainly hope not, because I think that we can achieve some of the results that we want. I think we can achieve that by other means.
Right. And the president is playing to your point right there, Dale. You're exactly right, I think, because that's exactly what he's trying to do. But, you know, let me rephrase the question to you, Dale. Do you think Iran wants a war?
No, they don't want a war, because they know that it would be devastating for them. They want to continue to push the edge of the envelope.
Well, they're pushing the boundaries. I mean, look at the shoot down of the drone and everything else they're doing with these ships and the British and what. I mean, they're really pushing here.
Well, and because they're pretty confident that the West does not want a war with them.
I see. So
they're gonna push as much as they can, up to a certain point, and then they'll stop it. As you've seen, there have not been any attacks against Americans or American citizens. Up until that point, I think war will be avoided.
Well, listen, it's a big thank you to Dale Wilbur and Ilana Friedman. So what I've got next, people, is this here. Probably one of the most frank conversations and discussions coming up right next. This talk of white supremacy and racism. Some people are saying white supremacy is the new Nazi, huh? Well, we're going to have a pretty blunt conversation on that as Viewpoint rolls on here.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. Certainly one of the most polarizing conversations in the nation is this talk about racism. And it's gone beyond racism now. I mean, this thing has taken on a life of its own. First, it was patriotism. Then it was nationalism. And then it was this racism as a thread throughout it all. And then it's he's white supremacist and then neo-Nazi. And there doesn't seem to be an end to the rhetoric and the talk here. And what's happening is this is dividing many Americans. And quite frankly, people, it's dividing families. You got to remember, America is a multiracial, diverse nation. That is the beauty of America, in fact. And what saddens me more than anything is we're using our strength and our diversity and the beauty of this nation, and we're dividing it by means that are so cheap and reckless. It's unbelievable here. Dr. Carol Swain is an award-winning political scientist, a former professor of political science, and professor of law at Vanderbilt University. She's the author of 8 books. You'll find those on Amazon. Dr. Carol Swain, look up, or right at the America Out Loud bookstore is her whole collection of books there. But she also is a recent mayoral candidate of Nashville, Tennessee, if you're not aware of that. Good to have Dr. Carol's voice here on this story. So some of the headlines and the topics, Carol, that are coming down here are from a lot of the candidates that are running for president here. Joe Biden comes out and says, in both clear language and in code, the president has fanned the flames of white supremacy in this nation. This Robert O'Rourke comes out, says he is a white supremacist. I mean, they're not hiding it, Carol. They're putting it right out there. Elizabeth Warren, same thing. He's a white supremacist. Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris. You go right down the litany list of candidates. And they're calling the president out. I haven't seen this before in my lifetime, where we've taken a president and assassinated him on race in such a way. What's behind all this?
Ever since President Trump has been elected, there's been active resistance to his presidency. In fact, for many of us that watched it, it was as if the political left wanted to have a coup. And when we think about coups where you oust elected leaders, we think about other nations. We don't think about America. And so what's happening in the presidential contest, there's a political strategy that the left is using. They think that they can use it to achieve their ends and perhaps put it back in the box after the election. But I fear that it doesn't go neatly back into the box. And what they're stirring up will lead, I believe, to unprecedented levels of racial conflict and violence, because they are stoking a race in a way that's very, very dangerous.
I mean, there's a lot of people that are fearful, Carol, of, I mean, that we're headed toward a real division, even more so in this nation, to another civil war. And then when you add to all this, Carol, the fact of what's happening with the Second Amendment and conversation on gun control, I mean, all the candidates on the left also are coming out with their extreme measures of confiscating guns. I think that leaves the country more divided than we've ever been before. But again, these candidates are not able to run on policy. I'm not hearing any policy of answers to handle immigration, or you're not hearing talk about the economy, because they don't want to talk about policy, because things are going pretty well there, aren't they?
Yes, but they're no longer policymakers, and this has been going on for a long time. And you may be aware that in 2002, I wrote a book called The New White Nationalism in America, Challenged Integration. And in that book, I just made a distinction between neo-Nazis, Klansmen, and extremist groups, distinction between them and a new kind of white leader that was concerned about civil rights of white people, white interests, those types of issues. But in the course of collecting data for that book, I had leaders of white rights organizations and spokespersons interviewed, but I also read a book called The Turner Diaries. And The Turner Diaries is a book that the FBI called the Bible of the Racist Right, and Timothy McVeigh had copies of it. He used to sell at gun shows. And in the start of that book, the U.S. government has passed something called the Cohen Amendment, taking away all the guns. And so the book starts off with this band of white patriots who want to liberate white people from a society that's run by minorities, and there's all this rape, plunder, but it's all about taking away the guns. And I learned in the course of researching that book, not just the extremists, but there are also many Americans that have anticipated that one day the government would move to take away guns. And because of the Second Amendment of the Constitution, you know, most Americans, I don't know what percentage, believe that we do have a right to bear arms. And so just the very fact that at this time that they would be stoking racial hatred and racism and calling the president a white nationalist at the same time that they are making a move to confiscate guns is very explosive. And I have said for many years, even back when President Obama made certain decisions, that if I wanted to create a racial war in America, I would do exactly what the political left is doing and has always done when it came to crime, when it came to the way racial preferences, the demonization of white people is all being privileged, when we know that white people, black people, brown people, yellow people, we're all struggling in America. There's an elite that's not struggling, but for the rest of us, we're struggling to make ends meet. And in the white community, there's more misery probably than ever before. They have this rise in mortality rate. There are a lot of deaths by suicide, as well as drug abuse and just hypertension and just various avoidable things because there's a lot of distress. And instead of moving towards addressing and talking about the issues and what's going on in America, they are stoking and fanning flames that divide us and using race. And it angers minorities and makes them more angry at whites, but also it causes the white population to have hopelessness and to be frustrated. And it is one explosive mix. And I can't believe that the Democrats don't know what they're doing.
You know, to take these extreme measures and get to the point of what you and I are talking about right now with race and the Second Amendment, which, as you and I both know, is a boiling point. It's a boiling point in this nation. And I don't hear anybody really talking about this in the way that we just are right now. But and then we talk about this explosiveness of where we stand right this moment, Carol. And you then have to look at the motives, as you say, behind all of this. What are the motives exactly? And what's the end game for all of this? And you see the way the media is fanning all this out there and the way that people are picking it up and some people that, you know, are taking matters into their own hands. Are we headed for a bigger confrontation in your heart, do you think? Or do you think we get through this
chapter? I mean, I've written a book saying that if we didn't move away from identity politics and multiculturalism, right. You know, pretty much our nation would be destroyed. And the only hope I saw was the American national identity, where all of us as members of individual groups would look to the whole of what America is supposed to be about,
right.
as opposed to pushing what we think is in our group interest. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it's part of a larger cultural Marxist agenda to destroy America as we know it, to put it on the equivalence of other failed nations. And it's sinister, evil, but I believe that the political left, that is their ultimate agenda. I don't believe that that's what most Americans want, and most Democrats don't want that, most Republicans, but I'm talking about regular, I'm talking about what regular people want. Because of money and politics and people that have deep pockets, they are able to get extremist leaders in office. And the Democratic Party, as far as I can see, has been totally taken over by extremists. And the at the leadership level, and the Republicans are not far behind. And it sets us up for a very dangerous situation. One of the things that I feel like I need to reread is the Turner Diaries, because the Turner Diaries, written by this guy named William Pierce, who created an extremist hate group called National Alliance, he wrote other books. One called The Hunter was about hunting down and killing interracial couples. Well, right now the political left has a movie out coming out in September called The Hunter, and it's about members of blue state leftist Democrats hunting and killing deplorables. That would be us, people that believe in America and its constitution and who have spoken favorably of President Trump. We are deplorables. And in this movie, we're hunted down and killed. If the political right put out something like that, if we were doing anything like that, I mean, it would be nonstop international news. But because it's the left, they get away with everything. And they plant the seed that leads their crazies to go out and commit acts of violence.
That's well said. In your heart of hearts, is President Trump a racist?
No, I think that he is someone that looked at America and saw the direction we were moving in. And like, you know, like people talk all the time, is he a Christian? Well, he's probably not a Christian in the way that I in the way that I am, as someone born in the South and born in the Bible Belt and who's had a religious conversion, but I think that he's a cultural Christian, at least, who loves America and who loves the people, and that he saw the suffering of white people. And when he was out on the campaign trail, a lot of people had hope, because white people have reached one of hopelessness, and they felt that he cared about people like them. And I'm not talking about white nationalists. I'm talking about everyday people, families that have children, especially those that have young boys, white males in their families. We're living in an era where all they talk from the left is about political privilege, and if you're a white male, that you're the root of all evil. And so when people have looking out at their little children and thinking about how these children are being demonized and what the future is going to be if the political left labels everyone that talks about fairness towards each group, including whites, as racist, then, I mean, it does seem hopeless for the future. And what is very scary is that Republicans were supposed to be, according to their national platform, standing for God, country, and family. They're going along with all of these schemes, that they don't have enough courage and background to stand up. And I have found from my own bid for running for office is that Republicans, you know, they will undermine a fellow Republican. If you're not lockstep with them and with political correctness that they themselves have succumbed to, then you're on the danger list. And you end up fighting members of your own party or having them fight against you. So it's not just the Democrat leftists that are against you. You find members of your own party not supporting you.
Well, we call that the establishment. And clearly that's what the president and a lot of middle America, what I refer to as middle America, Carol, that's what is being railed against here. And that's what they don't like. The establishment doesn't like this pushback. And the establishment is left and right, clearly. It's the people who held power forever. And they don't want to let go easy, very, very clearly. Do you think in an interesting sort of way, your explanation a moment ago about Christianity was really good, because the cultural Christian, the way you laid that out there, is easily understood by anybody of what that means, and the passion when you say love America. Looking at all of this right now, as we size this whole thing up here, and we take a look at the Democrats, and you listen to the sound bites that are coming out, Carol, do you think by chance that they realize this is their last grasp for power in a really weird sort of way? Well, first of all, they're seeing a lot of success with Black America, with Hispanic America, with various groups of America. And the president is having serious success. I mean, the whole prison reform, the economy, the jobs, you can go on and on as a litany list of things that he has done. He's invited these people to the White House. He's had serious, sincere conversations, things that previous administrations never did. Do you think they're in fear of that, the left, so much that they're seeing the country now turning back where it needs to be, and this is their last breath and attempt to pull it back to what you refrained a moment ago and referenced as a Marxist socialist environment? Is this what's happening here?
Well, I mean, clearly the extremists, you know, see a potential danger in that. And but I believe, so yeah, I mean, I think with the leftists, there is a big concern. And we go back to Nashville and my mayoral bid. I was in a city that was 70% Democrat, yet I was able to get 22,000 votes and come within striking distance of the incumbent mayor. I didn't make the runoff. But in the end, I was able to get the votes of soft Democrats and independents. Mm-hmm. A lot of my loss came from Republicans who backed a wow. Democrat because they believed that a Republican couldn't win. And I think that President Trump, and there are people who are Republicans who are busy wooing racial and ethnic minorities, trying to bring them into the party. But when they get into the party, the rest of the Republicans don't know what to do with them. That is a big problem. And I know that Democrats want to label Republicans as racist when we know the Democratic Party is rife with racism. And we see that with their push of abortion on minority communities in the Republican Party. You dare not utter racism, yet I do believe that there's something going on in the Republican Party that maybe because whites are becoming a minority, is that they're not ready to receive black people as leaders, with rare exceptions. I had plenty of support in the white community from a core of people, and many of them were Christians, and they believed in the values and principles that I represented and espoused. But when it came to the leadership and the establishment and people that could have really made a difference in the race by getting involved, such as Senator Marshall Blackburn, mm-hmm. None of those people were willing to stand with me. I was told that I couldn't speak at a Republican forum called First Tuesday, where two Democrats were invited to speak. And with all of that against me, I still, was able to come in number three in a field of 10. I was bent by one candidate 3-1, by the other one 5-1. Yeah. And still, they were not there for me. And it's difficult sometimes to process. We were so close.
Yeah, you were so close.
And yet, yeah. I couldn't count on them.
Yeah. No, that is great. That is well said. And listen, what you did there with the final numbers was remarkable. What you just said and the fact of how much you were outspent and what you did, you came within just a couple of points with the incumbent mayor of taking him out. And he's the one who is trying to send out warning signals right now with ICE and all of that business and trying to warn people and go against the law. And again, this reckless policies. Sadly, I want to say this is my commentary, Dr. Carol Swain, and it's this. Nashville is not better off today because of the steps they've taken to continue on with a radical socialist agenda that they are pursuing, sadly. It's a sad day for the market, as far as I see, of Nashville. As people hear your voice right now, they missed out on having somebody with the integrity, authenticity, the honesty of a Dr. Carol Swain. And people, as you hear her voice on here, I want to tell you again, her books are all, just go to the America Out Loud bookstore. They're all there. They're on Amazon. She's somebody who needs to be heard clearly. She also has a show called Be the People. Be the People, and you'll find that in the navigation bar on America Out Loud. She's part of the America Out Loud podcast network. It is a joy to have Carol's voice here, and awesome to have her part of this conversation. Now, this conversation is not going to go away, people. This is a fight of a lifetime, as Dr. Carol Swain has just put out there as well. Hardly anywhere else, and you certainly won't hear in the mainstream media, the conversation we just had, very clearly. That's why alternative news sources are doing what they're doing, and America Out Loud is a place for exactly that. This conversation, I want to invite you to tune in on Monday at 6 p.m. on The Voice of a Nation, and you will hear a most interesting, straightforward, honest, but it's to the point. It's something you'll want to hear about racism and about this white supremacy business. You'll find that on the network, 6 p.m. on Monday, The Voice of a Nation. We invite you there. Well, up next, friends, on Viewpoint, we're going to talk about America's cities from coast to coast. I have one expert coming up now that says, to save America's cities, we need to first let them fail. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Let me bring on here Dennis Santiago. He's an American strategist, philosopher, patriot, focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. It is an outstanding read, article, and column. You've got to go read it. But let's have a conversation now, and then I want to invite you back for an extension of this program we'll be having this week. I'll tell you about that in just a moment here. To save America's cities, we need to let them fail. Now, that's a big headline. And as we were discussing this, you really drew those parallels when you dived into this thing and did some research and some real investigative behind-the-scenes work on this. You felt it was important that they were going to have to fail. Why did you think that way?
Well, because at this point, there has been so much political and emotional investment into social and social justice, progressive experimental strategies of how to create the social compact of America being tried in the cities, and a lot of them are failing, but these, the political leadership is so invested in it, and as is the lobbying components of the community, you know, they're kind of in a trap, they can't get out of it. And so at this point in time, even if they know the stuff isn't working, you know, they kind of like, well, but it's too embarrassing to pull out of this. So we just have to ride it all the way to the end. So I just got the impression of it when looking at it, they're playing a game of musical chairs, right? And sooner or later, they know the music's going to stop. And when it does, which city is going to be the one that doesn't have a seat? And that's the one that I think is going to set off a time bomb in terms of a lot of these policies that didn't work. They probably, in a lot of cases, weren't going to work anyway. Until that happens, I don't really see that the politicians and the civic leaders in the municipalities of the U.S. have the political flexibility to do anything.
Which two or three cities come to your mind right off the top that you think are as close to, well, as you say there, getting to that end point?
I'd say probably the ones that have, you know, Baltimore, because the crime situation there is very, very dire. You know, things are falling apart. This is the city of Los Angeles is another one. I mean, you know, this is a city that actually had an active gentrification project in the core of its city that has gone into become a big homeless problem. And, you know, the place smells like dirty human waste. It smells like a third world country.
Well, I seen a story the other two about the rats. The rats now they're having a major problem. What's going on with that with all the rats?
They're on the verge of the danger of having an outbreak of bubonic plague, which is, you know, like that's a dark ages kind of thing. And remember, these cities that even 20 years ago were the envies of the world, right? I mean, you know, like these are the places you wanted to go and live. This is where, if you wanted to make it, if you wanted to be to somebody, that you would go there. And oh, what a disappointment that's turned out to be. And it's because, to a great extent, life was so good that they tried stuff that wasn't going to work, and now it's coming back to haunt them. I mean, think about it. San Francisco actually has people, city workers and city volunteers who go around the city every morning picking up poop and needles. And this is San Francisco, right? I mean, you know, songs have been written about this place.
Why do you think the residents are letting it happen? I mean, or are they letting it happen? Or do they not know how to handle their politicians? Why are they? Well, let me say this: they keep putting the same people in office, Dennis.
I think the main problem there is at ignorance? This point, no, I don't think it's ignorance. I think there is, if you live in a city, you can tell when it starts to smell. I mean, you know.
So why are they tolerating it?
I believe they're intimidated. They're intimidated by 25 years of political correctness and zero tolerance. It says if you speak up, you are an enemy of the state.
Yeah, but the choices or the alternatives are not good.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, at a certain point.
When is that certain point? Let's talk about the end point. How far off are we now? If you were to take a guess, when we just talk about, it could be any city, really. I mean, there are plenty of cities from coast to coast that are having this problem. It's not just Baltimore, L.A., and San Francisco. They're everywhere. But if you were to take a guess, how far off are we before we see the end game?
The end game kind of looks like this. Eventually, city government has to act, right? And I think, on a smaller scale, if you look back in recent history of the U.S., you have, remember Occupy Wall Street? where people basically would occupy parts of town that were right next to City Hall, or in the case of New York City, they actually occupied the parks next to Wall Street itself, and the city tolerated it for a while, the people tolerated it for a while, and eventually a level of acrimony came up to the point where they basically kicked these people out and they said, you got to get out of here, right? The problem that these cities have now is the number of people that have coalesced in these cities that are on the downside, the people that are part of the problem, has become so large that the infrastructure to move them out is larger than the cities can afford. So I think the tipping point here is when these big cities cry uncle and go ask the federal government for help.
You say here in the article, America's flagship cities have become laboratory experiments for social justice, heavily controlled by political leaders who subscribe to progressive agendas. They have indulged in costly and risky policies. Explain that.
Here's the thing, that the riskiness in the policy is they say, well, you know, we got to be nice to the people that we declare to be the down and outs, right? Mm-hmm. And in the course of doing that, what they've done is they've shifted the resources for the city to a fairly small group of people who are in pretty bad shape. But the price of it is that they've stopped taking care of the needs of the rest of the people in the city, the people at the top. The so-called gentrified side of the city, and more important, the people in the middle, the regular, ordinary folk of town.
Are those people moving out? Are they moving out?
In some cases, they have moved out. In other cases, they're kind of like sitting in place, looking around, going like, oh, geez, man, you know.
But how do you raise your kids in that environment?
The cost of that goes up. I mean, you know, you wind up with charter schools, private schools, which in turn causes money to be taken away from the public school system. And then you have political fights about that. These are all artifacts of people making choices that had consequences that they did not anticipate. And they're all coming home.
And as you say here, laboratory experiments for social justice, that just rung in my ears as a deafening message to say, why are they doing what they do? Well, because these supposed so-called leaders are using this as some sort of a day of reckoning in their causation of some sort of a measure of social justice and a warped vision of world that they live in, Dennis. It's pretty sick.
It is sick. It is extremely, it's a distended view of reality that, you know, it's not even like the internet distended view of reality, which is, you know, based on people making things up. This is a distended view of reality based on dreams of utopia that the people in the real world thought they were able to manufacture. These are academic theories that got off campus, right? And they had good intentions, but good intentions does not make for good public policy.
Another thing you say here that it really got my eyes open, and a very fascinating way you say it, you say, into becoming a third world America within our borders. This article, let me just tell people, is a must read for everybody. This is a project that Dennis and I have been passionate about and talked about for some time. And it's important to us because we really desperately want to save America's cities. I mean, it breaks my heart, as I know it does Dennis, and I hope it does you out there as well, to see what's going on. As I said to you at the top of the program, America is being gutted out from the inside out, people. And this is the plight of our cities. Make no mistake, this is one of the biggest tragedies and travesties of our lifetime right now is the tearing up of our great American cities. There's no reason for this. This is sad. This is beyond sad. And we got to do something about it very clearly. But, you know, when you say the third world countries and the way you put that out there, it's a great descriptive because it makes us realize that, you know, we really are. We are turning our cities into third world countries. And you know what happens with that, Dennis, is not only drugs go right way up there, but homelessness, of course, is obviously drugs. But then human trafficking is another big problem. That all follows its way through into the city landscape, doesn't it?
It does. And it has even worse effects. I mean, you know, it brings in tribalism. It brings in blind prejudice that it's blind prejudice against the people that are, you know, trying to do good. I mean, you know, how many cases have you heard of in the last, I don't know, 3-4 months where somebody that was a civic leader or looked up to all of a sudden is being accused of being the worst ogre on the planet? I mean, you know, these are consequence effects of things breaking down. They're breaking down in the cities because, you know what, I gotta tell you, man, you know, if you walk, I just walked through downtown LA, okay? A place that in the 1990s, I put a lot of work into because after the LA riots, I worked for Rebuild LA to make that town a better place. And it broke my heart to walk down the city and smell the walls going down the sidewalk. They smelled like the room of your college roommate that never did their laundry.
Mm.
Wow. It was awful. I mean, and this is not, I mean, this is not the kind of stuff that I put life, energy, and love into 20 years ago. It's sad. I mean, you know, and it doesn't have to be that way.
One of the questions I want to leave you with, and I want to leave our listeners with, and I want you to think about here, and we'll pick this up. I want to tell folks what we're going to do here, is this. All of this makes one ask why the left was able to take over our flagship cities in the way that they have. And when I say that, people, I'm talking about most all these markets exclusively are being run hook, line, and sinker from the left. And so then you have to question and ask yourself, why are their policies failing like they're failing? Well, when Dennis says up front, well, many times they're using this as a for a social justice experiment, like a laboratory, if you will. Well, I never thought of it in those terms, people, but that is a hell of a thought process to think about. So listen, there's a lot more to talk about this topic. This is a topic that is I'm very passionate about because I'm telling you right now, if we don't save our cities, we can't save America. Our amazing cities, the American flagship cities that Dennis and I are talking about now, if we don't save them, America will go down. You know, now there's a lot of other things Dennis points out. Number one, in the article, which is a must read and is at the top of AmericaOutloud.com, go read it and read it twice, at least twice. So it penetrates your minds, your thoughts, and think about this a little bit and how we do it, okay? Then what I want to do is I want to invite you back on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. on the West Coast. You can get us anywhere in the world, of course, at America Out Loud Talk Radio. And I want to invite you into the Voice of a Nation, where we will have a full hour on this program and how to fix the mess. It's going to be a very dynamic program because it will also be an Ask the Expert. And Dennis will join us for that as well as other great Americans. And we'll have an Ask the Expert process as you've seen me do that before. And we'll talk about how to fix it, how to fix some of these cities and what we got to do. And you know, and to end this one thought is I leave that question. You know, number one, how did they get all the flagship cities? And two, as you'll see in the article, Dennis says he's pessimistic that reasonable thinking alone can turn things around. There's too much reputational risk invested, as he's been saying. They're going to sit out, you know, they're going to sit on this time bomb until the fuse burns down and then hurts them, sadly, people. But more than that, it hurts our people, hurts the American people, which is what really stinks. And as he says, we ordinary people will pay the price for their inaction and ours. And when he says ours, that's called an election, people. That's what that is. That's called us not taking it serious enough to do what needs to be done. So I want to, again, call you all to action and help us save America's cities. Friends, I want to thank all of our superstars here on the show today here. We've had, again, another amazing viewpoint. And thank you again. Remember to tune in Tuesday now for that program there for what we're talking about here in America's cities and help us save our collective cities here. Friends, it's real simple. The call to action is it's time to get involved and get loud.